I'm just smiling because, you know, we're trying to do this new format, which involves a rejigging of the timing of everything on Thursday nights. And we haven't started this late for a long time. So just goes to show you that the best laid plans.
It is the first session.
Yeah, I suppose this summer rust is still. Well, I read a joke today somewhere, like a Reader's Digest joke. It was some guy named Frank is talking to God, saying, God, is it true that what seems like a million years to us is like 1 second to you? And God says, yes, Frank, I'll do that voice for God. Yes, Frank, that's true. What feels like a million years to you is just 1 second to me. And so then Frank says, and is it true that what seems like $1 million to us would only seem like one penny to you? And God says, yes, that's true, Frank. What seems like $1 million to you would only be like a penny to me. And Frank says, do you think I could have $1 million, God? Mm-hmm. And God says, sure, Frank, just give me a second. Well, if there's a hand nearby, why don't you just reach out and hold a hand? I feel great gratitude for being together again, and perhaps you do as well. So let's really open our hearts to that sensation of gratitude. I'm thankful for everybody who came from such a long distance and made this circle happen. And let's begin our evening with the invocation. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. It seems like the beginning theme is the relevance of time, because I came across this on my desk as I was cleaning it up today. The butterfly counts not months, but moments, which is a quote from Tagore. And then about 10 minutes later, I went out in the back deck, and I was just sitting there in the back deck, and this beautiful little butterfly came and was dancing around my head and dancing in the clematis, and it was just serendipitous. So let's say these words, these Arabic words that are such a keystone of the of meetings, of gatherings. They are usually said at the beginning of a meeting, but they also are words that form a very powerful sacred phrase. And the words are Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. And literally it means, in the name of Allah, the most beneficent and the most merciful. We could say the most generous, the most compassionate. There's some wonderful cards that Chloe devised, and one of the cards in that set is explaining the delicacies of translation of Rahman Rahim. But they are divine attributes of compassion. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. With me now. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Now just pause for a moment and think about any situation or relationship or circumstance right now which is veiling that attribute or those attributes of mercy and compassion in you. Perhaps you have a conflict or a stressful situation, and these things usually bind the ego to the situation, and as it binds the ego, it veils our natural inclination towards mercy and compassion. So now, with that in your consciousness, let's say it again 5 times. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. 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 And we'll do the one last set, and for this set, let us think that the vibration of our sound, the very vibrations from our lips, is being resounded in the dome of the world, so that it resonates to all of life, and that sensation, feeling, emotion, attribute of perfect divine compassion is being sounded in that dome like an echo that goes on forever and touches all of humanity. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. 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 Kirtan, so we have some ringers in the room, and the words to this one is very easy. It's Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, and then we're going to sing the words of the zikr as well. La ilaha illallah. Here's the first part. It goes like this. Except it takes a little ladder up at the end. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. And then the third part is pretty much exactly like the first line. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Let me see. Bismillah. Try that one. Bismillah. Bismillah. dance to this as well that we'll be doing next Saturday at the dances. Here's the sicker part. Listen. Did I say anything about what I'll be doing over the next few months in my email? Or was that my imagination?
I think it was your imagination.
Okay. I didn't send out when I sent... Oh.
I sent...
Did you guys get a reading?
No.
Oh my God.
You don't know anything about dances either.
Oh, well, that one came out a couple weeks ago.
What?
I got that.
You got that one? Yeah.
But not the reading.
No, I know what happened with the reading. It's the same thing that happened with the reading several times in my life. I sent it to myself and I forgot to send it to the group. So I always address it to myself and then blind copy the group. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a great reading. Very short reading. I was very compassionate and only sent a 3-page reading. I'll send it out to you tonight.
Okay.
Fortunately, none of the presentation that I prepared has anything to do with the readings. That's really good. I guess I was right about on both accounts, that it was my fantasy, but I actually did send out a message about what I'll be doing over the next few months, but I only sent it to myself.
I'm glad you know.
Yeah, you know.
I know all about it, so, yes.
We'd be lost without you.
Well, here's what the message says. It said that over my next 10 classes, if I'm successful in actually doing one per class, and you know what the chances of that are, but I'm going to really try. I'm going to present 10 themes of the Sufi path. And that's going to relate to graceful passages, because I think I will be doing that until I myself am in my passage, i.e. probably to the end of my days. It's a big subject. But I'm kind of stopping and doing kind of a sidebar of 10 themes of the Sufi path, which I think everybody will be familiar with to some degree, but it's helpful to go into them a little bit more deeply, and we'll be able to apply them then to the themes of graceful passages, which is looking at the journey of the soul, looking at how we adjust and navigate ourselves through our twists and turns of our life, and how we help each other through those twists and turns of their lives. So... it's very embarrassing I did that again, but I'll just have to practice Tajreed, and that's the first theme. Does anybody know what Tajreed, besides Chloe, does anybody know what I know. She knows what Tajreed means because she's an Arabic scholar, and she read the reading. Does anybody else know what Tajreed is?
T-R-J-R-I-D.
Okay. I don't know if there's a corresponding word in Farsi, but I don't think the Arabic has made its way into the Farsi on this particular theme. Otherwise, you'd recognize it.
T-R-J-R-I-D.
Tajreed. Nothing. All right. So, this... Let me first, before I get into the dream, let me just say a little bit about the list of 10. How many of you are familiar with the fact that Inayat Khan always said there's 5 this and that? There's 5 kinds of breath, there's 5 aspects of the heart, there's 5... Everybody's has heard that before, right? There's actually a term for that, and I meant to look it up because I heard Pirzia talk about it recently. The punch of something, like it's the Urdu is punch of something, punch meaning 5. And that's the Persian word for 5, isn't it?
Punch,
yeah, in Urdu it's punch. And so the lists of 10 are kind of double that. So you get the 5 great Sufis of India, or the 5 great, you see this all over India, the 5 of this and the 5 of that. But when they do the 10 of something, it's double the 5. And it's just their way of saying, like this, like the Ten Commandments, like this is a listen up to these things. And Pirzia was saying on this retreat that I was listening to recently, it was saying, everybody should have their own. You don't need my list or the list of Inayat Khan's or the list of Rumi or anybody's list. You need your own list, of principles for your spiritual path. So I'm going to present 10 themes. They don't have to be your themes. It would be actually a good exercise for everybody to kind of devise your own 5 at least. So you can do this. You know, when you're talking about your spiritual path, well, there's 5 really important things to me. This. So that being said, there's something, there's a limitation about lists too, which is that they direct our mind towards form. They direct our mind towards organization and kind of putting ducks in a row, which actually, ducks don't actually go in rows. If you've ever watched ducks before, you know, they don't do that. Nature doesn't do that. nature has beautiful symmetry, but nature is also very, it has a mind of its own. Our nature is like that as well. So the danger of lists is that I'm thinking about another thing that Pirzia oftentimes says when defining Sufism. He said, one of the ancient Sufis said this. He said that Sufism was once a reality without a name, and now it's a name without a reality, which is a scathing commentary on the form of anything, you know. So we got to be careful of form. That being said, lists are very helpful because they help us memorize things. So that's just my caveat before I present over 10 weeks this list of 10 principles. Any questions about anything?
Tell us what the 10 things are? Or do we have
eventually?
Week by week.
Something has to make you come back every week.
Yeah,
it's like those cliffhangers, those old cowboy movies.
Serials, yeah. When we last left our Sufi heroes, they were talking about Tajreed. This first theme is called Tajreed, and Tajreed is a word that, like most Arabic words of any value, and most of them have value, is multi-layered. If you look up, as Chloe did in her big concordance, what was the three-letter, what would it be, T-J-R?
No, J-R-D.
J-R-D. So she looked it up, and of course there's 100 different words that are related to that root sound, and they all are slight, you know, they're all related to each other. It's like a family genogram of etymology. And it's very beautiful to study Arabic this way, even if you'll never converse in it. Like, you're not exactly conversant, but you know a lot about the structure and the poetry of the language. So Tajreed, some of the connotations and meaning of this word is stripping away, bearing, I think it was denuding.
Mm-hmm.
Is that denuding? Yeah. Purification. Unveiling, which is what I called it in the reading that I didn't send you. Isolation. Unburdening, divestment. So you get the idea that these are all different sort of layers of the meaning of this. In a mystical sense, it is the crucifixion before the resurrection. And to this degree, I will reference the reading because I sent you out something by, not by Inayat Khan, the first part was by Musharraf Khan, his youngest brother. And in that, he talks about the architecture of the cross. And the horizontal line is our human personality, our human life, our relationships with each other, the development of our character, our personality. The vertical line being the line that brings us back in our soul to its initial or original condition. So in other words, everything that exalts us, everything that brings us up high. And that is, of course, why we need the spiritual life for balance, because the material world invites the horizontal line, but it doesn't invite very much of the vertical line, except perhaps in very material ways, like intoxications of various kinds. That's an invitation to the vertical line, but it might come through a very material way. So, and his commentary is that any architect will tell you that the cross is the foundation of all building, and if you only have strong horizontal lines and not strong vertical lines, you're going to have a very problematic building. I thought that was a very good analogy. So the Tajreed is the process and the capacity for the vertical. And to ascend the vertical line of our being, we need to lighten ourselves from our false trappings, if you will. What are some examples of false trappings of our ego that might keep us away from that ascension?
Resentment.
Good. Resentments, grudges.
Blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, earlier on I was saying when we were doing the Bismillah that the ego binds itself to a circumstance which is causing a grudge. And it does that to protect ourselves. That's its function. And the more the ego binds itself to a conflict or a situation, the denser we are. And of course, the vertical line is not dense. It's the process of refinement. What are some other things that are the ego's attached to besides conflict that might...
Self-importance?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the opposite of that?
Yes.
Like
false humility
or lack of confidence.
Lack of self-confidence, yes. Which is just another statement of the ego. It's just the opposite of narcissism. What about simple things that we don't even think of as being trappings, like your name? Mm. You know? Your Sufi name, your given name, your nicknames, your roles, you know. I'm a mom, I'm a dad, I'm a social worker, I'm a liberal, I'm an NDP, I'm a rhinoceros party, like all the things that we say, this is me, this is me, this is me, this is me. The more we say that, the more we are layering on these. It's like putting on a shirt, then putting on a sweater, then putting on a vest, and then putting on a coat, and then and pretty soon we just got all these layers that we say, well, this is me. Is it? Well, the process of Tajreed is what we use to say, no, that's actually not me. What is me is my pure state, my original condition. And what's the original condition? Well, it's the condition of the soul. And even the soul is not in its original condition, because of course it's already come here with all sorts of shirts and vests and coats and scarves, things like that. There's one more interesting thing that I read on the internet today, which you didn't mention when you looked this up, which is that there's a corresponding word called tafreed. You run into this at all? Tajreed and tafreed? Tafreed is, this is just a bit of Sufi trivia, tafreed is the short way of saying all praises belong to God. So if you study Islam, you'll come across the word tafreed. So it rhymes, tafreed and tajreed. So there are some universals of tajreed which we've all been through, and maybe you might want to chip in some of these now or later on when we have our spiritual conversation. I remember a couple years ago my father had a heart attack, serious heart attack. We all thought he was gone, including the doctors and nurses. They all thought, this guy's gone, he's 90 years old and he's just had a major heart attack. They didn't know the O'Loughlin will, but so my brother and I, you know, both got on our various forms of transit and went there. And I went there three times over the course of a couple of months. And I left my life. I left my life. And my life became a hospital room, and washing my father in the most primitive ways, you know, like I don't mean primitive in an awful way. I mean like we do with babies. Now, some of you might have been through this with your own parents or relatives or friends, when they're in a health crisis of great proportions. That is a tajreed that we didn't ask for, because we've left our life, we've left our circumstances, we've left our roles, we've left our job perhaps, we've left our children perhaps, we've left everything to go to a place where there's a different priority. That is tajreed. We then come back also the person that's dying, if they're dying, of course, is going through their tadrit, but, you know, the helper is going through a tadrit because they're unburdened of the usual trappings of their life, the usual rhythms, the usual everything. Some of you will be in this situation, I'm assuming. Yes, more than once for some of us. What happens when you come back from that kind of situation? Back to your life?
You kind of have to get reoriented.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You have I don't love the words proportions, but, you know, things that used to seem huge suddenly are of no real import.
That's right. Part of the reorientation is, we got to get back to our life, but it's also being oriented to our life with this new reality, which is I've just been through this experience which deepened me. Because when you're doing that stuff, you don't have to say Bismillah Rahman, you don't have to say the zikr, although it's good to say the zikr. That is a spiritual practice when you're helping somebody die. And you come back, and of course there's a different sense of meaning and value everywhere you look in your life. Now, this tends to disappear fast if your ego binds itself yet again to the forms. But nobody can take away that experience. It's with you forever. That's why I always recommend that people spend time around the dying if you have an opportunity to do that. So that's an example of tadrid that you don't actually set out. It's unintentional. There's other ones like house fires. Or, I'll tell you one I had just 2 weeks ago. This might affect some of you. I lost 3,000 emails out of my filing cabinet on Outlook Express that I hadn't responded to. I have a problem, a little hoarding problem with emails. Some of you perhaps share this, I don't know if there's any other digital hoarders in the room, but I'm the opposite of Chloe in this sense. She's very organized, I'm very disorganized. So I keep anything that I think I'll need to look at or respond to or think that's very interesting. Outlook Express decided to divest 3,000 emails from 2015. Now, what neurotic person has 3,000 emails from 1 year that you're looking at him? So it's God's way of saying, really, Amir? No. So there's these divestments that happen. What do you think I felt after that happened?
Scared,
okay. Just guess.
Lost.
This is free association on Amir's personality right now. Scared, lost, panicked.
Relieved.
See, Zainab has known me longer than anybody in this room. And she's known me very well for a very long time. So the easy thing would be you got panicked, you got scared, you got freaked out. And I have to admit there was probably a part of me that was a little bit like that. You're like, oh my God. What happened? Can I get those back? You know?
Yeah.
But really, by far, the predominant emotion was, what a relief! Oh my God! I feel so light! I feel so freed! That's the outcome of tadrid. And that's what happens when you go on retreat. That's what happens when you go on silence. That's what happens when you fast. All these are ways to actually strip down the personality and to take away things that interfere with that sense of lightness that's part of our soul that gives us the wings that we fly with. Are you all thinking about some of your tadrids? Either invited or done with intention? Or am I the only one who's having these things in his life? Perhaps you'll share about them later. Another tadrid that comes for us is related to the one I was talking about before, which is helping somebody die. It's what we feel after they die. And I was thinking a lot about this yesterday when I was attending a memorial service for Anne Jerome. And I don't know if anybody knew Anne personally, but many of you know Anne. You didn't even know you knew Anne, because Anne came to every kirtan for years, and she was usually right, like, in front of me. And she passed away August 22nd, and yesterday was her memorial. She'd been sick for about 5 years, off and on, and the last time I saw her, she wasn't looking well. That was in June, at the June Kirtan, and the summer was a quick process towards her passing. So what happens at a memorial service? Well, this was a bit of a marathon. This was 2 hours of people getting up and crying in front of a large group of people. And saying these things from the bottom of their hearts about this amazing woman. She was a really amazing woman. And I was really watching this as a person who knew Anne, but also as a person who knows psychology, and as a person who is on the spiritual path. And I was looking at it from all these different levels and thinking, this is what grief does. It really, like these big guys, like one of these, there's a few men that spoke that looked like, you know, football players. And they go up and they'd look at the microphone, and you could just see it happening. You know, their throat would get really big, and you know, they would start talking about this person they loved very much, and they were going to try to maintain their control, and no more control. And what happens when you lose that control? It's bare. You know, you're there without your ego's clothes on, in front of all these people, and it's so real and it's so beautiful. Now, there, that's a tajrid. That is a stripping down, because your ego can't handle grief. It can't. Well, some people can. I mean, some people are so controlled that they won't let themselves feel even in the biggest loss. But most of us, when we lose a beloved, we lose our control, quite rightly. And it's amazing. It's an amazing spiritual experience to just sit with that for a couple hours while people are sharing that level of stripped downness. So, in time remaining, I'd like to just maybe talk a little bit about the technique of tajrid. Unless you've got any comments or questions so far, dare I ask? Nobody wants to ask a question about the jinn plane? Or somehow connected into tajrid?
I actually do have a question. I've become aware of angels recently. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't know whether it's angel energy or my own energy. And so it seems like that's kind of a...
Is it on this... Is it related to the theme of tajrid? Or is this just a question that's kind of on your mind these days?
I'm not sure. I'll read the reading and I'll ask you.
Well, or maybe as we talk about...
I quite understand the concept here.
Okay.
Tajrid.
Well, have you ever had gone into silence? Have you ever had an hour of silence, a day of silence, a retreat on silence?
Mm-hmm.
That's tajrid. We're taking away a normal thing, words,
mm-hmm.
and we're saying, I'm not going to speak. So that's tajrid. It's a stripping away of a habit. Why do we do that? To free up a part of ourselves which mm-hmm. needs to breathe more.
Well, then it is tajrid, because the angel energy is something that I've push away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck for a long time.
And mm-hmm.
I've, in the last few weeks, have cleared away the
yeah.
ability to come through me.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what tajrid, the process of tajrid is. It's clearing away so that we can have things come to us that are related to the soul, be it angelic energy or creativity. It could be, I'm going to say it, from the jinn plane, you know, that creative forces that happen in that world of beauty and imagination. But it also might be intuition. It might be what we're always in tune with, but we block. And angel mm-hmm. awareness would be one of those things. Have you ever relinquished a habit Well, yes, of course. Everybody in here has broken habits. Is that not Tadri? It's a stripping away of your habit of biting your nails, or habit of consuming something, or your habit of cursing, or whatever it is. It's, I'm going to take this, which is a normal thing in my life, and I'm going to get rid of it and see who's there once I get rid of that. And you generally find what? That you're lighter, you're happier, you feel more mastery. Fasting, the same thing. I'm sure some of you have experienced fasting, maybe some of you fast on a regular basis, if not completely from food, like one does at Ramadan. It might be, I'm going to, for the next month, not eat meat, or not, I'm going to eat as much as I want, but not eat sugar. Well, that's tajreed. Y'all understanding the concept? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So there's lots of unintentional tajreeds, and as the Mevlevis say, if you don't hear the whisper, you'll feel the boot. Tajreeds always will come. It's best for us to kind of get used to them. You know, I always use the example of my hair. Well, that's the tajreed of aging. You know, that's not, we don't intend that. And we can fight it all we want by going to the gym and taking supplements or something. But we're not going to beat the tajreed of aging. So you want to dive into these tajreeds, into these divestments, with great friendship and friendliness. So the Sufi and the mystics of all paths do tajreed very consciously. How do they do that? For example?
Zikr.
Because we're saying there is nothing but the divine presence. So all these things that I think are so important, La ilaha illallah. That is a kind of tajreed. How else do we do it on the path? Doesn't have to be the Sufi path either. It could be any spiritual path.
Meditation.
And what aspect of meditation is tajreed?
Well, you're divesting yourself of your thoughts, theoretically.
Yes. If you're doing a meditation, like most meditations are, that involve stopping your superficial thinking. Good. What else?
Practicing compassion.
And where is tajreed in that? I agree with you, but can you pinpoint the aspect of practicing compassion that's tajreed?
So giving up something that the ego is telling you because of feeling compassion for somebody else.
Absolutely. What kinds of things do we have to give up to be compassionate? Grudge, was it you that said grudge, Sahira?
To that effect, I can't remember.
So grudges, what else?
Judgment,
opinions.
Mm-hmm. So hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. How else do we practice tajreed on the Sufi or any other mystical path? You guys are doing a very good job of it right now. But if I asked you to practice that, you would probably have a harder time at it. There's a riddle.
Silence.
Yeah, it's related to silence. You're very still.
Listening.
You're very still. Nobody's moving. Hardly at all. And if I said, we're going to now be still for the next 5 minutes... He'd be shifting around. Oh, I'm so uncomfortable right now. Oh! Isn't that interesting? As soon as we try to practice a tajreed, what fights back?
Ego.
Ye little ego, or ye big ego. It fights back. It doesn't like to be told, sit still. It doesn't like to be told, move either, if you feel like sitting still. It doesn't like to be told anything. So that's why we do ego training.
It seems like there's a bit of spirit in there too. I mean, like the joke that says, if you want to make God laugh, just tell him your plans.
Yes.
And that's kind of like a tragedy, in that you're giving up the plan, the ego plan anyway.
Yes. And that happens every day to us in an unintended way, where we are, you know, we look out the window and we're supposed to have a picnic, but it's pouring rain, and we could practice the dread of our attachment to that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's bigger ones, which is like, gee, this relationship isn't going to be so easy,
mm-hmm.
or so gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
So then the mystic, of course, becomes better adept at accepting these and giving up our attachment to a hope or dreams. The last thing I would say about typical Sufi ways is to die before death. Do we know what the Arabic of that is? It's very commonly quoted, but I never remember it. Yeah, that's the one. Say it louder, Khalil.
Motu qabla motu, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what does die before death means? It means to do all the things that which we've been talking about, really. It's to let our attachments to things die, our associations, our socially constructed personality, our attachment to our identities, our names, all these things that we're going to lose when we die, including this form, this vehicle. And so why wait? Why not become adept at finding out who we are without those things now, before it happens rather suddenly or without our control? And when we do that, like we were talking about earlier on, we can return to life with different proportions and perceptions around meaning and value when we get good at dying before death. Have I ever told the story of the king and the parrot here?
Khalil did.
Did Khalil?
Yeah.
I think I missed that though. I think I must have been away.
I had a class about it.
I know, but oftentimes classes are given by other people when I'm away, and that's why the class. So I don't know
best
that I.
Best class ever.
I am deeply wounded. my ego. Woo! I'm sure it was the best class ever. So I'll do probably a not as good a job as Khalil did telling this story. But it's a good story about dying before death, and it's a good story about tajreed. There was once a parrot who was owned and imprisoned by a king and a queen. And this king and queen loved the parrot very much, and loved the parrot so much that they put it in a gold cage with embellished with jewels, and gave it the most beautiful fruits and sweets and everything that a parrot might want. And the parrot lived in this state with its leg bound to the perch for many years. And the parrot knew that he was loved and appreciated that, but of course wasn't too crazy about his state of imprisonment. Well, one day the king came to the parrot and said, "Oh, parrot, I'm going to go off to the jungle where I found you. And you know we love you very much, and we want to do what we can to convey your message to your brethren who live in the jungle still, as a favor to you." And the parrot thought for a second and then said to the king, so the parrot was a very conversational parrot, the parrot said, "Oh, that's very kind of you. That's very, very kind of you indeed. I would like to send a message to them. I would like to say to them that you and your queen take very good care of me in this golden cage that I'm inside, but that I long for the trees that I used to fly around in when I was with them, and I long for that freedom. Please tell them that for me." And the king said, "Certainly, I will tell him that." So the king went off with his entourage into the forest, into the jungle where he had found this parrot. And he looked up in the trees and he saw all the brothers and sisters and and family of this parrot flying around, and he said, Parrots, I have a message for you from your long-lost friend who has lived with me and my queen these many years. And the message is this. He wants you to know that he's very loved in his golden cage, and that he misses you very much, and he misses the freedom of flying with you in the trees like he used to. And all the parrots stopped, and they looked down, and they heard this message. And then the king saw one of them fall from the tree onto the ground, seemingly dead. And then another, and then another. And pretty soon it was raining dead parrots, all falling from the trees. And the king was quite distressed by all this because he loved parrots. And he was thinking, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? I've given them this message and it's killed them all. I can't believe this. He was so depressed. So he hurried back to his palace and he came in and he went to the parrot and said, oh parrot, something terrible has happened. I gave your family your message and they all fell down out of the trees and they all fell down on the ground dead. And the parrot listened for a moment, thought for a moment, and then fell over dead. And the king thought, oh my God, this is the worst that's ever happened. I take his message to the jungle and I kill all his family and I come back and I take that message from the jungle and tell him and now he's dead. This is terrible. But the king and queen loved their parrot very much, so they wanted to give the parrot a very nice funeral. And so they untied it from the perch and they put it on a beautiful velvet cushion and they took it out, a great procession, out into the garden where he would receive his sacred burial. And they put the cushion down, and at that, the parrot got up and flew away, up into the trees. And the parrot's looking down on the king, and the king is mad. The king is saying, how dare you? You've betrayed me. You've tricked me. And the parrot said, oh, no, king, it is you that tricked me. You tricked me out of my home and into that cage. And when you brought back the message from my brothers and sisters, I understood. I understood how to get my freedom again. Great punchline, huh? For those who might be wondering, the parrots in the jungle were not dead either. You were worried about that word. They were faking it very well.
That reminds me that at Fatehpur Sikri, there is a tomb of a parrot that behind.
That's right.
In the back. By
right.
Salim Chishti's.
Yeah, right by Salim Chishti's.
And a little grave marker about that big. It's his parrot.
Is it Salim Chishti's parrot? Do you know?
I think it was his son's parrot.
Oh,
probably.
Okay. Yeah.
So how is this story related to Tajreed? Sorry.
Anybody want to...
Can you the question?
How does this story relate to the theme of Tajreed? You know this story, don't you? It's from the Masnavi, or it's not from the Masnavi, but it's a folk tale that Rumi, like many of his tales, borrowed and put in the Masnavi. You gave a class on this, so can you answer Mariam's question?
I think you have to give up what you have.
Yes, so...
So, that... cage. You have to give up that somehow yourself.
Do you think he was attached to his cage? It was a thing that he had to give up?
He gave up to die before dying. Is that the one? Die before dying? Was that?
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. It is die before dying. He wasn't attached to his cage. He hated his cage. He loved the king and queen, but he really didn't like the prison. How many of us here like our prisons?
The prison of our mind?
The the prison of your mind, the prison of your body, the prison of your taste, the prison of your identity, the prison... I'll give you the answer really quickly because we're running out of time. The answer is yes and no. Mm-hmm. We love our prisons and we hate our prison. Mm-hmm. Now, the parrot in the story, I don't know how much he loved his prison. He told the king the truth. I love you and you treat me very well, but I don't want to be here. I want to be flying around in the jungle, i.e. my soul's freedom. My original state. So how do you get to your original state? You may have to play dead. Mm. How do you play dead? Silence, fasting, giving up things, saying I'm sorry. these are ways of playing dead because it's playing ego death.
The king also experienced that too.
Yeah, but it was one of the unasked for tajreeds.
Right.
Yeah. The parrot did it quite intentionally because he had been taught the message, and that was really a smart message that his family had sent him because he hadn't thought about this. And the family in the mm-hmm. forest said, just pretend you're dead. And they did it to see if it would fool the king, and it did. Very smart. Mm-hmm. So they saw the king was gullible. and so the king had one of those unasked for tajreeds, which we have all the time. And the parrot devised one that got him his freedom. I love that story. It's one of my favorite stories.
Part of that story is also about not just the freedom, also joining other parrots.
Like yeah.
Being part of that, yeah.
Like this, you mean?
Yeah.
Like this conference of the birds that we're having?
Yeah.
Yeah. Joining other like-minded souls and to it's like when we pray or meditate, it's so much easier when we do it with each other. And I always tell people who have a hard time meditating at home on their own, I just say, just think of the other tens of thousands or millions of people who are meditating right now, meditate with them, and it's so much easier. So yeah, it's to have the company of our brethren.
It's like when Jahavadim asks, what's the purpose of the purification press? And I never hear anybody say, it's because everybody does it, so we feel we can feel connected to everybody. Like we can feel like we're part of a movement.
All practices are like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we say the prayers of our order, it's like that too. Other people don't say these prayers, so it joins us in a certain way to a particular sangha. But we could say there's a larger sangha as well, of all people who meditate or pray anyway. And then, of course, there's the largest sangha of all, which is humanity. So there's a poem I want to finish with that I would like one of our Farsi speakers to read aloud. If you read your line in Farsi, I'll read the line in English afterwards. Just each line.
عشق است بر آسمان پریدن صد پرده به هر نفس دریدن.
This love, it soars to the sky, 100 veils tear with each sigh.
ای دل ز کجا رسید این دم ای دل ز کجاست این تپیدن.
I love that. That's the chorus of this song. I ask my heart, where does this breath come from? And heart, from where does your beating come?
اول نفس از نفس گسستن اول قدم از قدم بریدن.
First we breathe, then love takes our breath away. First we step, then in stillness stay.
زان سوی نظر نظاره کردن در کوچه سینه ها دویدن.
There is a glance that comes not from the eyes when we run on the road of the heart's sighs. Amor.
Amor, begu zaban murghan, man danam ramz to shenidan.
O winged one, speak in the tongue of birds, I know the secret language of your singing words. 8:46. Did I get through all my stuff on Tajreed? No. But I'll send out the reading and maybe we'll do another little bit on Tajreed next time around. Maybe do some more practices, actually. You got the concept, I think. Let's have a little bit of tea. So this is the time when one person will go get the tea, or maybe two, can go get the tea and prasad, I called it in the email. Prasad.
You can help.
And then if you need a bathroom break, now will be the time. But keep the silence. And just, if you're going to have a bathroom break, try to make it quick and come back and join us. And well, this will just be a short 15-20 minute soft bit.
What does Mershin say? Something like you acquaint yourself with something that makes you uncomfortable. That you would rather not, you know, you wouldn't normally do.
The practice of Lent, is that?
You know, I think Lent's a very good example where you give something up. And being uncomfortable is a necessary part of it because Chloe always jokes with Shahabuddin, you know, when he says, you know, I want you to give up something that you'd like to eat, and she says, is camel meat something I can give up? You wouldn't be uncomfortable if you gave up camel meat because we're not in the habit of eating camel meat. But if we gave up sugar, that would probably make us uncomfortable if we're sugar eaters. So I wouldn't say that is Tajreed by and of itself, but it's part of the process of it. Another example that I saw given for Tajreed is traveling. That when we travel, we unburden ourselves of our normal life and we go places where nobody knows us and they're all speaking a different language, different cultural habits. And there's a kind of discomfort with that, but also a real freedom. You know, we just feel so light and, oh, it's great, nobody knows my name here. Mm. Nobody expects me to give a class. Nobody expects me to, you know, change their diaper here. This is great. Or nobody expects me to nurse them or fix their software, whatever it is that we do.
What about family gatherings?
As in giving them up?
We have a lot of family gatherings and they feed something in us when we're having them, but sometimes that takes away from us being able to have solitude and meditation. So it's hard to give up something so positive that feeds our soul.
I would recommend you probably consider giving up other things before you give up family gatherings.
But we have so many of them.
Yeah, I know. You bring up an important aspect of Tajreed, which is repose and rest.
Zainab had a talk on that. on the website, Zainab has a talk on that.
Oh, yeah?
It's funny, I was just listening to it this morning, halfway through.
That's really interesting. You know, Mariam listens to all these talks that are up on that website. She's the only Vancouverite who does this. There's people who don't live here who do this. But I would really, you know, if you're interested, do what she does, which is when she's doing the dishes, you have Zainab talking to you, right? Or Amir.
That was time to read. So
yeah.
That's my way of doing.
So I remember Pir Zia talking about this. He was joking. He was saying, very important in the life of a Sufi is to have balance of repose and activity. And Ayat Khan talks about this all the time. But he said, I can't really say very much about this, nor could my father, Pir Vilayat, because, you know, we're busy all the time. Mm-hmm. We're going around, you know, the message says have balance between repose and activity, but those of us spreading the message are burning the candle at both ends and not getting enough sleep and traveling too much. And so those were his versions of family gatherings, I guess, but you know, he was saying repose is part of Tajreed, that coming away from activity, away from socializing, whatever it is. I don't know what you're going to do at your family gathering thing, though. It's nice that you've got a family that wants to gather. Yeah.
So is the idea to bring this into our life in a more direct way.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things are going to happen to us, but then the idea is also to be able to strip away when we want to strip away.
Yeah, one of the meanings of the word tajrid is a capacity for that. Well, it's kind of like I was scraping and sanding my deck last week at the cottage. It took forever. But if you want to just sit and wait, time will take care of it. Time will strip it down. Or you can strip it yourself when we'll all get stripped of all of this eventually, but the spiritual path involves an intentional stripping. So you develop a capacity for saying, I'm not going to go on the computer today. I'm just not going to do it. And that's a mastery. And there's a certain outcome of that. What will the outcome be? I don't know.
You might lose some business.
You might. But you might also gain some sanity, and you might feel lighter. You might slow your rhythms down. You do an intentional tajrid for an intentional goal. You don't just do it because somebody said, you should do this, you should, fast. No, you should do it for a reason. I know you shouldn't say should.
What about holding a grudge against someone because their child beats your child when having playdates?
This isn't just a hypothetical question.
It's so hard not to. Because when my son used to, physically express his anger towards my daughter,
yeah.
Both of them are my children, but I really treated it seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I had to remove him from the situation, go upstairs with him. I don't do timeouts, but I would sit with him,
mm-hmm.
and be really firm talking to him, and sometimes he would have tears.
Yeah, it's even worse than a timeout.
Timeouts wouldn't work with my kids.
Pardon me?
Timeouts don't work with my kids.
Yeah.
They get too upset.
That was a kind joke towards your wisdom as a mother, because if you really want to make it uncomfortable, getting back to Zainab's comment for the child who's misbehaved, just go spend some time and have a heavy talk with him. Yeah.
That's how my son stopped hitting his sister. So I expect that of other moms to do with their kids. Like, show reactions that will actually stop them from hitting my child. So it's hard not to get hold of a grudge, especially when they're family. So.
Especially when you have a mother's love and therefore a mother's instincts for protecting your child.
Yeah, and especially because my son is younger, it is a form of. Anyways,
I've got
no. How would I relate the topic of tonight, like stripping the ego, and how does that relate to that uncomfortable
expectation,
uncomfortable situation?
Say more.
Stripping of expectation.
Expectation that other people act with civility?
You can't force people to
mm-hmm.
think and do what you think is right to do.
That's a good answer. We expect people to act according to our values and our way of raising children, for example, our morals, or how does that work out for us usually? That's a question.
Disappointment.
Yeah, we're constantly chronically disappointed because people don't act according to our, because each person has their own idiosyncratic beliefs about the way things should be, and of course the world doesn't cooperate. That being said, I don't know that you should give up that which is really instinctual. I think there's a place for communication and assertiveness as well, as long as it's not ego-based, but it's based on a need, a real need. So I'm not so sure I would counsel tajrid of too many kinds, but I think Miriam's answer is good. Yeah.
It's hard, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not easy.
You mentioned something about attachment in love relationships. Can you say more about that?
Ditto what we just said.
Expectations, disappointments.
I'm in love with this song by Jesse Winchester that I'm singing these days, that my friend Akbar, a.k.a. Lodi and Salmon Arm, taught me. It's called That's What Makes You Strong. Mm. And
sing it.
Oh, God. That's actually on the subject. I don't know if I can sing it by memory yet. The gist of it is, if you love somebody, it means you're weak. But if it means you're weak, in a strange way, that's what makes you strong. And
can you repeat that?
can I say something? I've been listening to Pema Chodron.
Yeah.
And Pema Chodron talks about when there's a situation of having an emotion, especially something that's painful or difficult, we tend to kind of make an excuse around it. Oh, I'm not hip enough for her, or she's, you know, she does this and I'm not. But that's called hardening around that.
Mm-hmm.
And she says sort of keep the soft, original, painful experience of the original emotion, and that's what helps you grow.
Yeah.
You don't harden, you
that's right.
Soften.
That's right. Okay. This is one of my favorite songwriters, who has had his own great tragedy. He's passed on now, a couple years ago. That's what makes you strong.
Did Jesse write that?
Jesse Winchester wrote that song. Yeah. It's on his great album, Gentlemen of Leisure.
How did you just go in there and pick it up like that? Like, was it waiting for you?
I'm very organized. I know exactly where my mess is.
Really?
Really.
That's amazing.
Well, you cleaned out all those emails.
Oh.
Yeah, so if I haven't responded to your email, that's why.
That made you feel free, right? So if I went here and just removed all in the papers, you'd feel great.
See, the great thing was that no one did that except the one. I mean, if you came in and sabotaged my computer and got rid of the 3,000 emails, it wouldn't feel so light. Oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw everything out that Chloe's been hoarding. It'll make you feel so light.
Make me feel light.
Yeah, make you feel light, exactly. It'll make you feel really light if you did it.
That's what I do with my husband's clothes sometimes.
Yeah, she does it too.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what shirt? Yeah, I find stuff in stages going out to the garbage because she's not brave enough to actually take it right to the garbage. So sometimes it gets to the laundry room, and other times it gets to the deck, and other times I find it in the garbage. Oh God.
That's what makes you strong.
Take a moment to once again feel the gratitude for our time together and to share that with the expression of our heart's consciousness with those who couldn't be here tonight. To those people in your life who you know might benefit from the sweetness of this refined and loving atmosphere. Please join me with a khatam. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us, send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being.